Hey everyone, if you're curious about my book, How to Become a Pro Cyclist, and if it might be for you, there are many podcasts with some of the biggest name pros. You'll know all of them if you're a cycling fan, giving you their advice on what it takes to make it, inserted throughout the book between chapters in the audiobook and video series formats. Here's a small clip from one of the many podcasts inserted throughout the book so you can get a taste to see if this is the kind of content you might enjoy. If you're listening to this, either my book is out and you can go buy it, or it's about to come out any day now. Again, the full book is titled How to Become a Pro Cyclist, and when you buy it, it comes as a bundle with all three, the ebook, the audiobook, and the book turned into a video episode series bundled together so you can consume it however you like. The video series gives the most content and allows you to read and listen at the same time, just like a Netflix series. There's also a lot more photos, videos, links, screen recordings, details, and other media that couldn't be added to text or audio alone. Anywhere you find me, there's probably a link. Or you can just Google howtobecomeaprocyclist.com and you'll find it. I don't run any advertising on these podcasts. They're just a way to give you a taste for what's in the book, absolutely free. But if I could ask one thing of you, it would be that if you enjoy this content, please share it. It took me an average of 4 hours and 12 minutes a day, every single day, 7 days a week for 10 months straight to put all this together. And if you enjoy the content, it would mean the world to me if you shared it because it really does help this book reach more people. I wrote this book as a guide I'd give 15, 20, and 25-year-old me who wanted to try to make it as a pro, because in my career, I got luckier than most regarding having some of the best coaches and mentors in the world. I got coached by some of the best coaches in the sport, and I got to live and learn from some of the best riders in the world. Coaching is incredibly expensive, and you basically just get lucky to have access to such amazing mentors like I did, so I wanted to make that knowledge accessible to everybody, which is why I wrote this book. If you enjoy this content, share it on your Instagram stories or wherever else you post your content. Send it to that one super keen cyclist you know that wants to learn, wants to try, but might not have access to those awesome coaches and mentors. And one last thing, either the books have just come out or they're about to, and that's really scary because I spent a year of my life on them and I have no clue if it's going to work out. So if you share it, it really does help these books reach more people, and especially in the beginning when you're just taking a chance and trying, but really nervous if it's going to work out or not. I see every time someone shares it, and it means the world to me that people are cheering for you and they want you to do well. And you never forget those people that cheered for you when you were just starting out. So here's my immense gratitude in advance. Thank you. Okay, enough of that. I hope you enjoy this little clip from the audiobook and video series. This one is with Mitch Docker. You'll certainly know him from the Life in the Peloton podcast. Yeah, maybe it's shifting gears a little bit, but when we started recording, you're saying about how, I managed to come back how many times and do this and just like keep trying. And when I listened to the book back the first time after I wrote it, I was like, I make this sound like horrible. Like I make this sound like, why would anybody want to do this? I was like, I had the time of my life. I had so much fun. And the biggest thing that I ever took from Swain, who obviously you know as well, is just to like enjoy this part of your life. When it's all about you, you have no real responsibilities. Like, yeah, okay. Being broke sometimes is really hard, but you have the freedom to at least try and there's no other responsibilities. Enjoy this part of your life because it will be over at some point. And I just loved hearing all his stories from being homeless. And I'm wondering, do you have any stories
of Sueno?
Sueno or yourself, either or.
I was never really as bad as you guys. Like, I think that's the thing though with the book is that, and with anyone's scenario, in anyone's moment, their worst is their worst. Do you know what I mean? Like for someone, like for me, I remember being in Holland the first year. I was running for Skill Shimano and pretty much didn't really finish many classics, if any. Got through it, got my head kicked in, you know, was getting driven home by the DS every day. So he was sort of pounding down on me a little bit like, you know, well, not in these exact words, but sort of like, yeah. So I'd also bait him a bit too. Like, oh, yeah, Rudy, how come you decided to sort of, you know, why'd you sign me? You know, pretty much I was saying. And, yeah, just trying to get a bit of like, oh, no, you'll be right. But you're in his Dutch way. You'd be like, yeah, I don't know. We're starting to wonder that, you know. You're like, oh, fuck. You know, like, Jesus, that's what I wanted to hear. So I was just sort of feeling really low. And then like little things at those moments would trip me up. Like, of course, I had cash because I was Neo Pro. So I think I was earning whatever it was, 27,000 euro. But, you know, the team was making me rent the house for 850 euro. Plus I had to pay tax in Holland. So by the end of it, I really didn't have any money. And you know, little things trip me up. Like I couldn't pay for my phone bill, you know, because it just didn't have the money for it. And the bill came in and all of a sudden, you know, and just at that moment, it doesn't sound like much, but at that moment, I couldn't work it out. I'm just like, fuck, what am I going to do? I got like a debt notice and I didn't want to tell the team that, you know, I couldn't pay it and I didn't have anyone to go and help me out, my parents. And this is just one of those growing up moments. It's like, all right, I'm just going to have to sort this shit out. You know, it's in another language. I'm just going to have to. But in that moment, like it broke me. I was just like, it was like after another thing, not finishing a race, you know, not going to get a start in a race and team telling me they didn't want me and blah, blah, blah. You know, it wasn't that exact order, but it was something like that. And then finally it was suddenly like, and you got no money and you need to pay this now. And you're like, fuck, you know, like, fuck, I hate this shit. You know, I want to go home. And so I guess everyone's worst moment is, you know, relative to themselves. You know, I never was broke, and I still was, you know, in a team and in a house and all that sort of stuff. I wasn't homeless. But in that moment, I just felt like I couldn't take anymore. And I broke down and, you know, ran in next door to these people I only knew a few times and said, can you help me? Help me? You know, that sort of thing. So I remember that moment. And I think they're the moments, they're the first little hurdles that you go, okay, I got over that. And then when you do, you get hardened from it and you work out, okay, I'm ready to push forward. So when something else comes the next time, you're like a little less broken down and you take it on. And then by the time the big hurdles come when you're in the world tour, you're like, fuck off, you know, like I've already worked my shit out, you know, like, yeah, it doesn't feel nice, but you're like, whatever. I'm not going to just go and cry and be a baby and go home. You're like, I'm ready for this now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I haven't talked to like Tadej Pogačar, but you know, I've never talked to a pro that said, "Oh yeah, my first year in Europe was easy."
Yeah.
Like everybody has a story just like yours, where it's like it's brutal, it's so hard. It's never happened that somebody's come over. Okay, let's exclude the Europeans. Someone that's come over and had to deal with all this stuff, and then it's brutal for everybody. So why did you come back? What was the thing that made you be like, oh yeah, you know, like this first year it was horrible, but I'm sure year number two is going to be better. What was the thing that made you believe that, oh yeah, I could do this. I should definitely try again.
It was actually someone, a really good mentor I had. I came back to Australia and I was training with him in the gym. He was my gym trainer and friend and mentor. And we're just training and he said to me, yeah, how was the first year, you know, first session or something? I was like, ah, oh, I was all right, you know, I think I'll see out my second year and then that'll be it. You know, like I truly believe that because I just felt so far from the mark that, you know, just following the wheels and then getting dropped and then somewhere in Belgium being cold and freezing and just, you know, trying to get back. I was like, this is just shit, you know? And, he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, yeah, I'll see the contractor. I've got one more year. And then that's it, man. Like, I couldn't really see how I could get re-signed. I started hearing whispers like, why'd they get this guy? And, you know, probably not going to re-sign him and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, I believed it too. And he said to me, well, what were your goals the first year? I'm like, goals? What do you mean? It's like, well, what were your goals? I'm like, well, I don't know. I didn't have any, you know, like, I don't know. I didn't even know the races. How could I make a goal with not knowing the races? And I sort of understood at that moment that I'd had such a big goal without saying it to turn pro all these years, something to focus on, something to get me out of bed, something to do. And I'd achieved that goal. And so the following year, the first year, I just sort of went over there and floated around and just got punch bagged, you know, through the season because I didn't have anything to really grasp onto to focus on. And I wasn't really a goal setter. I mean, he sort of made me wail. He goes, well, set me 3 goals and when you come back to gym on Thursday, we're going to go through them. I'm like, fuck off. I'm not setting goals. Like, they're just for wankers, you know? But then I was like, all right, I'm going to go set these goals to shut him up. And yeah, lo and behold, like I wrote I wrote down, I think, like one race win and, you know, ride the Tour de France and ride Paris-Roubaix. And he's like, no, 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 you got to write like big stuff in there, like hard stuff, you know, you can win a race. I'm like, I didn't even finish a race. He's like, I was like, all right, well, win three races. He's like, yeah, all right, now we're talking. I'm like, three races? I couldn't even like barely finish, you know. The Tour de France we didn't do. I rode Roubaix and, you know, who knows how it even happened, but I went back and I won two races the next year. I went from like doing nothing to suddenly coming back and you know, winning two races. And okay, I didn't achieve the goal, but I think what happened was I set myself on that path. And subconsciously, everything that I did from that moment, I didn't open that book up until the end of the year, the next year. I'd even forgotten that I'd even written those goals, you know? I literally did it to just tick the box. But I think what happened is it was etched in the back of my mind. That's the way we're going now. And every little training session I did and everything was for suddenly had a purpose. And I think obviously there was the fact that I had the year under my belt and all these things worked in my favor, you know, but I really truly believe from that moment on, I always set goals because I'm a big believer in that. It doesn't matter if you don't achieve the end result. It's what you achieve on the way to trying to achieve that. If you don't set that goal, you're never going to go down that road. And it's interesting where that road takes you.
That's amazing. So it was totally just in the back of your mind. You wrote the goal in a book, and going from writing that goal in the book to achieving the goal, was there anything else that you didn't revisit it or write it up on the wall or make some sort of plan?
I thought it was just a load of wank, to be honest. I'm like, fuck, like clearly not now. But at the time, I was just like, fucking hell, what's that going to do? You know, like seriously, like what's that going to get me in the front bunch in, you know, Gent-Wevelgem? What the fuck, you know? But yeah, of course, I was still training hard and I was doing everything I could. But I think just the slight difference was maybe I just raced with a different kind of view, you know. I looked out for myself a bit more. I didn't just roll into the role of, oh, I'll just do everything the team says and be aimless. I was like, I need to do something for myself. I want to do something for myself. And so when those opportunities, you know, came about, you know, I took them and I went back to what I did before I turned pro. I used my instincts to, you know, to get mean and to sort of race and you know, of course I wasn't doing that all the time, but when the opportunity, you know, presented itself, I think I took it with both hands. Whereas the years before, those opportunities just I was so oblivious to it. You know, I just didn't have that mentality, didn't have that driving goal.
Yeah, interesting. And then so going back to when we were talking before about all the like the crazy things you try to get better, and obviously I was really extreme with a lot of the stuff that I tried, but everybody has like they come up with all these ridiculous ideas. Was there any of those that you came up with, like just crazy stuff? There has to be some. I want to tell people the truth. What is something ridiculous that you're embarrassed to say now that you tried and be like, "Yep, that was gonna work." And
when I was trying to be pro. Like I think I just really had this warped opinion. I think I thought I was much better than I was. And I know this is drifting off a bit, but we went across with our team, which is called Drapac, and it was a pro Conny team, but really we were barely even continental in terms of we had the status of pro Conny, but we were just practically like a local team. The reason why we got Pro Conny was because that got us a chance to race in Europe and we had the financial backer to pay the license. But we went across and did Tour of Austria, and I always remember we were trying to become professional. So our director, Scott McGrory, he spoke to a director of HCC at the time, Alan Piper. And he was probably just like, let's just get this Australian team away from me. So McGrory's like trying to push. I think it was actually Team Mobile at the time, not HCC. And he's like, yeah, what do I need to do to get these boys into the team? And Piper's probably just like, yeah, look, if they run top 10 in Tour of Austria this week, yeah, no worries, I'll sign them up. So he came back and presented the news to us. Boys, if you can run top 10 here at Austria, there's a contract waiting for you. And I remember going out for a ride with a guy, Darren Lapthorne, thinking, I reckon top 10, like it's going to be hard, But I reckon one of us are a chance here, GC top 10. And I mean, I could not move from like second last wheel, that whole race. Our whole team, we had eight riders, five riders pulled out day two, and three of us finished, Lap Thorne, myself, and this guy, Stu Shaw. But like, I mean, finishing was everything I had in my whole body. And I remember just thinking back on that, I said to Lappers, oh man, what the hell did we think we were doing here? Top 10. Like, this is just so fucked how hard it was. So I think in those days, it was just like, that was the best thing that could have happened then. The crazy stuff, I just don't know if I was...
Wait, the best thing? Mm-hmm. The best thing that happened was getting your head kicked in or having somebody give you a specific goal? What was the best thing
getting
that happened?
Getting my head kicked in. Because okay. I came back. All right, continue. I came back and I understood the reality of what I was doing. And I was like, oh, it's almost like... Like, I was a Dragon Ball Z fan back in the day. And it's almost like, if anyone has watched the show, it's almost like you go fighting and you meet like a Super Saiyan. And you're like, holy shit, like Vegeta fighting Goku. He's like, oh, he's Super Saiyan. I've got to train like so much harder to become like a Super Saiyan. And like the world tour was like, I got my eyes opened up to like, oh, that's like the next level. And I thought like I said, I thought we were going to be like sort of okay, you know, like it's going to be hard, but we'll be somewhat there. And I was like, oh, we are so far from this world. And so I came back and was like, cool. Like whatever I was doing before, I'll throw that out the window because like that's just like baby sort of training. I can't specifically remember how we upped it or whatever, but like I think, you know, Lappers and I used to do these big rides out, you know, in comparative to your stuff, it's nothing. But in my own world, it was just sort of like doubling down. It was like, okay, we didn't train on time then. We didn't have power meters or even speedos. We used to just literally leave and come back and use your watch, you know. I'm not saying it's ancient.
Sundial.
Yeah, it's not sundial, but it was like, let's just ride to, you know, the top of Donabuang and that'll be 200K. Let's just do that, you know. So things like that. And we just keep testing the waters and pushing it further and let's go up to Lake Mountain, you know, let's just see if we can do it, you know, things like that. So in comparative to what I do and what everyone sort of pushed the limits now, and I think young guys do and it's crazy stuff, but back then it was sort of like, you what? You rode to Lake Mountain? You didn't. No way. You're like, yeah, fuck it. Let's just do it, man. Let's just see if we can do it, you know? So because we realized that we had to lift the bar, and whatever everyone else was doing, we had to do more and sort of keep it a bit hidden in a way, because it was maybe
a secret weapon.
Pardon?
Secret weapon?
Yes. Is that secret what you weapon, were thinking? But also, like, I guess we're a bit afraid because people might think that it was stupid to do that much. I don't know if that was for you. Like, yeah, like
the whole book.
Yeah. Like, of course, like, you know, the skiing and, you know, the things that you were doing. It's like, okay, maybe I don't want to tell anyone like this because I'm thinking I'm like crazy. And of course, we weren't doing like stuff mm-hmm. like that, but it was like, I probably won't tell someone we rode to Lake Mountain today because like that's just sort of too far. But yeah, that was like, it's not crazy at all now. You know, like people do that all the time, but in its time, it felt crazy. It felt big, you know. But yeah, look, through the pro career, you know, like I said to you, I'd test the waters and try and push myself to the, I guess, the breaking point and then dial it back. You know, especially with the diet stuff, you know, really, really, really played around with low carb stuff until it's just like, right, you need to have some kind of carb. Yeah. And finding out in really detrimental points, you know, in races and things like that. But I think, I'm just trying to think of the crazy stuff, but like, I mean, it's so hard when you set the bar so bloody high, mate. You're nuts. It just surprises me that. Yeah, well, maybe that's why you're not pro. Who knows? You know, maybe that's why you were like a super trainer, and I don't know what the I don't know. There's not one magical bullet. You know, it's not train harder and you'll become pro. Clearly, you know that. And there's also not slack it off and you become pro. It's just something that's got to click. And the thing that I say to some guys is you've got to perform in the right moments. And you pointed that out a few times, which was so unlucky for you. Like when you did that test with the Bora DS there, or the feeder team, and you're out just randomly going to do that test, and you had your best legs, and then he rocks up, and you're like, mate, the stars are aligning. Like, and that's what I mean. Sometimes with guys, they're performing when no one's watching, and as soon as everyone's watching, they just can't perform. And they're the moments that you need to just show. And it doesn't need to be a race-winning result. It just literally needs to be, like you did, a good test or a top 10 when they're watching and they care. And they're the pinnacle moments that change the difference between, you know, guys who are, everyone's good, but the guys who make it, you know. And I think the top guys, they just win, 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 and of course they make it. But the rest of us have to just perform when the timing's right.
I really hope people just re-listen to everything you just said, because I was smiling the whole time because you're just reliving what I wrote, but also what I lived. Like, first thing, top 10 in Austria, like, oh yeah, no problem. We can go get that. That'll be easy. Like, when I was getting ready to go to Europe, I vividly remember the conversation I had with Sueno being like, hey man, I don't think these races here are going to be hard enough. Like, I'm looking at the classics, like, oh yeah, like 40 guys coming to the finish together. Oh, this is not going to be hard enough, man. And he's just laughing at me. And I think back on that, I'm like, what a moron I was. Because, like, just some random, like, Wednesday race that nobody's heard of. Listen, man, you know, I got called up for this race the night before. Like, oh, yeah, meet us there. And everyone's saying, like, oh, yeah, it's not that big of a race. It's just, like, one of these, like, 1.1 classics. We're getting changed in the bus. And, you know, we got our camp chairs, you know, like every other Conti team there. And then there's the Quick-Step bus coming by. And then there's Greg Van Avermaet going by. And I'm like, oh, this is a smaller race, huh? And I'm like, the hardest thing I've ever done, and nobody's ever heard of this race. And then you see the stats that you did at the end of this race, and it's just like, there's nothing even close to this in North America. This is a different sport. This is a different planet. Mm-hmm. And like, you get your head kicked in like that. But then also having a specific goal, like having somebody tell you that, like, if you get a top 10 in Tour of Austria, that's the most motivating thing ever. And then you're willing to go train the house down. And then it, like, you have a very specific thing that you're stoked on to train for.
But I also, like, it is nice. It is nice, something to train for. But I also realized how bogus that really was, you know. Because, like, yeah, like, there was no guarantee. Even if we could pull that off, they'd be like, oh, wow, this guy's really good. All right, let's see what happens in the next race, Brixia Tour, which is, again, exactly one of those races that you just talk about. I hadn't even heard of the race. Not many people have. This is, like, known in the World Tour, or in the Peloton, not the World Tour, but in the Peloton, as one of those races is just bullshit hard that no one even knows about, you know. And we went there next and just got our asses completely handed to us. So, like, you know, it's fickle. And I can't reiterate that point that it's all in the timing, and it sounds really easy, but you really got to think about who you want to attract and what races they care about, and try and hone your form into that and perform well in that race or in that moment. And it, like I said, it doesn't have to be, if you can win, great, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes you can win at a race that the team doesn't care about and, you know, get top 10 at a race that they do care about, and that's better than winning the race they don't care about, you know. So it's just understanding the teams you're trying to attract and what they care about, really. And it could be literally a race that a DS won, and he's got the connections, like, oh, I won that race, it's fucking hard. So he finished 20th there. He must be good, you know? It's like, that's his ego, you know? So play to that, you know?
Absolutely. And what you were saying is like, oh, yeah, why didn't I become pro? It's like, oh, I know that. I listened to the book back. I'm like, dude, it's fucking nuts. Like, you hear some of the stuff, he's like, what the hell were you thinking, man? Like, no shit, you weren't going to do well there. Like, look at what you did. Like, yeah, 300K of motor, 912 kilometers of motor pacing in 3 days. Yeah, that's the plan to do it. Like, no shit, right? But in the moment, you think it's great. I know that's why I didn't make it there. I overdid it way too many times. But the part that, like, how you're saying how it's fickle, and sometimes, yeah, the stars just align. Like, yeah, 2022, you know, I waited like 4 years to get an opportunity like this, and then I broke my pelvis right before the races. Like, that sucks. But then, yeah, this random Bora thing, like, I'm just like pulling my bike out of the car, like, oh, I'm going to just like go for a good ride today. And the guy's like, you want to do the test now? I'm like, yep, let's go. And eventually it just, like, boom, lines up like that. I think the most important thing, like, one of the things, again, what I learned from Sueno is, like, enjoy this time, because you have to just keep getting up, keep showing up. You have to keep showing up for that, because there's so much luck or lack of luck in bike racing as well. And you might do everything right, and if you just get a flat tire at the wrong time, that's just how it goes sometimes. And you just have to keep showing up, but you won't keep showing up if you're just trying to just grind through it and make it tough all the time. You have to really enjoy this time in your life. And that's what's going to get you to keep coming back for your second year in Europe, your third year, your fourth year, like just a really brutal and hard lifestyle.
And when you say enjoy it, I think when I think about it, I'm like, what did I really enjoy? I think I enjoyed that fight. You know, I think that's what we enjoy. We're a bit sick like that. You know, we just enjoy the challenge. Like we're ultra competitive people, and you notice yourself back in the normal society, but just outside of the pro world, that, you know, anything I do, it's like ultra competitive. You know, even just like I rock up to park run here. It's like a park run of like 15 people, and I've gone as fast as I can go. There's no point trying to race myself anymore. I'm just going to cruise today. And then someone rocks up you haven't seen before. You're like, who the fuck do you think you are? Come to my park run, do you? Oh, it's on, bitch. And then next thing you know, you're like, you think this guy's going to be good. And like 500 meters into it, he's dropped. And you're suddenly like, oh, now I can't slow down. And you're pitying yourself for the next 4.5K. You're like, what is wrong with you? Like, seriously, mate.
Just twist the knife.
I'm like, it's like no one cares. And then I'm thinking like people are going to see like, oh yeah, his time was slow. It was a bit slower. Like no one even gives a shit, but like it's just programmed in there.
But that's so great. And that's something you can take with you for the rest of your life. Like the two things you can take with you for the rest of your life is knowing how to take care of yourself and not doing the dumb shit, like how to just be a healthy, decent human for the rest of your life. But also just like having stuff like that, like enjoying being fighting and competitive for stuff like that. That's awesome. I do the exact same thing. Like with trail running, I signed up for they had the world championships for trail running this year here, and they had an amateur race that would go on the same course. And I just signed up for it. And then I find myself competing against Kenyans that are 50 kilos. Like I think this sport needs to have weight classes, because I was looking at some of these guys like, how? Like I'm in the heavyweight division here being over 70 kilos.
Yeah.
Trying to compete with these guys, but it's fun. Like you're just like, I think I got like sixth place or something like that. I'm like, that's awesome. Like I was like so stoked on this, and I went so hard in this. Like my heart rate was 190 for 45 minutes. Just like I was so determined, I'm gonna win this race. That it's my first foot race ever, and I'm like, I have to do well at this.
No one cares, like you know what I mean. But
you do.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you said, you have to enjoy it. I think that's what. Of course, there was certainly moments that you don't, but I think to go back to the whole training thing that we spoke about earlier, and I was saying that you've got to have the dark spots to enjoy the high moments, and that's what I think I loved about it. You know, those grand tours, it's so weird. I hated those things so much. Like, literally, like, I'm never fucking doing another grand tour again. This is horrible. I can't do it. And then literally 36 hours after, you're like, it wasn't too bad, the Giro. Actually, I don't mind that, actually. Should I do it again? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you were wanted to kill someone about a day ago, and now you're like somewhat considering it. So I think we have that sort of, I think everyone probably has it, but maybe us more so, professional athletes or cyclists or whatever it is, that we love that challenge, the, you know, beat us down and see if we can come back. That continual sort of bite, I guess. And that's probably what I enjoyed out of it. The lifestyle, sure, later on, you know, when you're getting settled and comfortable, but that's a different challenge too, because then you're fighting yourself as well. Like, okay, well now I need a lift, and I need to get that, you know, that hunger back. I think you referenced the Rocky film in the book, didn't you? Yeah.
Did you? If I
Oh no, I think
I'm not I probably did. I have a tattoo on my arm that's one of the Rocky.
Maybe books, that's what you were saying.
I'm not sure if I actually
But like Rocky 3, like, you know, when he beats Apollo.
Clubber Lang.
Yeah, Clubber Lang.
No, that's
and then Lang Apollo gets killed by Clubber Lang, but like Rocky's like sort of cruising around.
No, that's Drago.
Like he's got the good car, and he gets like sort of lazy and stuff, and he gets comfortable, and he's got to get the eye of the tiger back. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like that, you know?
Yeah.
There's a period, especially in my career, there was a period without me even knowing it, that of course you're still racing hard and you're doing what you can to get your contract, but you need to get that gritty, that that hunger back. And you see a lot of guys slip out of that moment, sort of that whatever it is, 5-6 year period of their career, and they lose it and they go on this downward spiral, and only a few are able to get it back. Whether it's true or not, but I feel like that was sort of what was happening with me, and I was like, all right, I need to get this back. Wasn't a day and night decision like that, but yeah, you have that initial sort of grittiness and hunger, and when you first come in, and then you sort of get comfortable, and then you got to get it back to sort of prolong it, have a long career, and if that's what you want, you know. But I think I enjoyed that challenge too.
How did you get the eye of the tiger back? I'm curious. What did you do for yourself?
Well, I think for me, when I think about it, it was actually a crash that sort of made me have the, I guess, the Apollo Creed moment where he's, you know, when Apollo gets killed, he's like, fuck, you know, I got to get it back, you know. So for me, it was a crash in Roubaix that sort of stopped me, and I had to go in hospital for a week, and I had that chance to sort of just be taken out of the bubble and actually realize what was sort of going on. And I didn't really like where I was as a rider. I understood how many people were sacrificing for me as well to live this life. And I realized it was a bit selfish the way I was sort of doing it. Half-hearted almost, you know, like going through the motions, comfortable. And I guess I just sort of made the decision then and there, like, okay, well, this is like seriously impactful, not only just on me, but on all the people supporting me and around me, that if I want to do this, I really need to do it. And I remember at the time I was working with a coach, and I was trying to sort of portray this, but he couldn't really understand from one day to the next why I wanted to go at it a different sort of way and do things and kickstart things really differently. And I was like, I just needed to cut it and just go with someone new and start fresh. And that was sort of the next part of my career, the last bit of my career, that I was like, well, if it's over, I want to go out like seriously, no regrets. I know it sounds really stereotypical, that, but I really had this mentality like, cool, I've got 1 year left on my contract. I've got to get back from this crash. And I'm just going to go full biscuit again. Everything I've got, I'm going to train till I break, you know, do big sessions, get this new trainer, do it, everything to the limit. Because then if I've got 1 year left, I know that I just gave it everything. But then that was the kickstart. That was what the teams were looking for. That was like, oh, this guy, he's committed. He's ready. You know, he's not just another guy coasting through.
And so how did you pick? So getting a new trainer was one of the things to get you back to lift your level. How did you pick a new trainer? Like, I'm guessing you just felt like the old trainer wasn't pushing you enough, but then how did you select whoever this new trainer is? Did you already know the guy?
It wasn't like he wasn't pushing me, but I just didn't feel in that moment he was hearing me. And I just sort of was like, I think if I want to do this, I need to just start fresh. You know, like, I think you start with someone new and they want to impress you and you want to impress them. And I think that was the whole comfortable thing. You know, like, oh, yeah, I could twist it, and like, oh, I wasn't feeling that good today. Yeah, no worries. I know you're good for it, type feel, you know. And the new trainer's like, oh, fuck, this is the new guy. Like, oh, yeah, I've got to, you know, do, you know, 6 hours, or do 6 hours in 1 minute, you know, and make sure it's all ticked off. And every effort's like, do 400 watts, 405 watts, you know, like, I'm going to be like on the mark. So just those little percentages, I really wanted that again. And I didn't put it down to exactly those points, but I think I felt like I just wanted this new inspiration. And this guy, Kev, he came to me. And he was a guy that I knew from when I was really young. And he was at that Roubaix. I saw him at the start, and he messaged me after the finish and said, oh, hey, Mitch, I know you got a coach, but I'd really love to coach you. And I wasn't thinking about changing. I was like, oh, yeah, look, I'm working with this other guy. And over that next sort of month or so, I was like, I guess it just planted a seed. I was like, oh, yeah, it's not really feeling it anymore. And I was like, fuck, maybe I should pursue this, Kev. And then that was that, you know.
Okay. And that's Kevin Poulton, I'm guessing.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Before I forget, we should probably actually mention, what's the name of your podcast again?
Life in the Peloton.
If people want to go find it. Life in the Peloton, of course. And going back to this training and stuff like that, kind of one last question here is, something that I hear a lot from like amateurs, and or including myself, like I'm not a world tour pro, but the question that I hear that comes up a lot is people think you do way more testing and the training is way more scientific than it really is. And of course it is scientific and specific, but it's also just very, very simple. And guys don't do that much testing at all. And everyone that I talk to about this, like I know for myself, I had a couple session, or I had one session, it was like an over under session. And if I could do that session and it felt like a workout, not a test, as in like I wasn't dying doing it, and my weight was good, I knew I was good. And then Jan Maas was saying same thing for him. And I guess, yeah, I think it was Durbridge was telling him that he does his 5x5 at 500 watts or something like this. And everybody just has a couple staple sessions that they do, like just the fundamentals of their training that they need to do in order to be, that, to check that they're good. Or if they do these basic sessions, they will be good. Did you have anything like that?
I didn't really have like 5x5s. I hated those. I didn't really have like, okay, I'm going to do this and if I can, I can hit it. Because I'm thinking about that. I think towards the end, like we used to have this really cool, and whether it's still in trend or not, I don't know, but Kev, we'd have this, he'd probably kill me for telling people this, but it's probably old now, so it just probably doesn't matter. But it was like 2 weeks before a grand, or be like 3 weeks before a grand tour. So you get to a point when you're training, well, I always felt, because Kev was in Australia, I'd get to a point with training that I could do so much on my own, but there came a point where I'm like, I'm sort of maxed out now mentally, physically and mentally. And I needed that person there to get me that last few percent. And Kev would come over in the last few years, he'd fly over and we'd do like a 10-day motor pacing training camp. And it wasn't like a motor pace, like you just sit, go every day full gas on the motorbike. It was literally just to have a motorbike with you every day. So if it was a recovery day, you'd sit behind the motorbike to get that pedal stroke on off, you know, like a race. And sure, there would be long days where you do 6-7 hours behind the moto too, and then be fast days as well. But every session was with the moto. So then when you're on the limit on these efforts, you know, trying to do 10 minutes threshold efforts, he was there. He was there with you. Like, yes, yes, you've got it. Come on. You know, just when you like, if you're there on your own to do this last session, you're like, I can't do this, man. Fuck. But because he's there, you could squeeze it that last bit. And it was so pinnacle for me. Like I'd get to the end and I knew it was like, oh man, I can't fucking do this at last. And then 10 days, it'd be like, cool, we're in this new phase. And he'd arrive and we'd get behind the bike and we're like sort of just there to sort of, he'd just hear all my crazy ranting and all this sort of stuff. But you'd get back and you wouldn't literally high five, but it was like that feeling like, yes. Another one in the bank. How good was that? You know, so, and we used to do this thing where we'd be in Andorra. So we're at altitude. We'd finish, you know, a ride after 3 hours, jump on the trainer, you know, do another hour on the trainer. And then from off that straight into the hot bath. And it was like the secret sauce, you know, it was just like, all right, we're going to just take it up a notch and do the triple. You know, get the endurance in, heat the body up on the trainer at altitude, and then finish with a hot bath. And I'd get out of that hot bath and just be like on the ground, just like not able to move for the next, you know, 20 minutes, letting the body cool down. And that was like, I felt like, whether it was true or not, I just felt like, yes, no one else is doing this. And I'm going to be just flying. I'm going to be just that little bit better than everyone else.
Hey, everyone. So I hope you enjoyed that little clip. If you did, I'm sure you'll enjoy the full book, How to Become a Pro Cyclist. So again, you can find it anywhere you find me, Instagram at jburke95, or just Google howtobecomeaprocyclist.com and you'll find it if it's been released. And if it hasn't, and you're listening to this, it means it's about to come out. If you enjoyed this content, you probably know someone else that would enjoy it, so it would mean the world to me if you shared it on Instagram or wherever else you post your content. You never forget those people that shared it, cheered for you and tried to help you when you were just getting started and really worried if this is even going to work. So thanks, everyone.